Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
On FM, digital and your mobile.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour with me, Matt Bentman.
And me, Sue Bailey.
Alan Alder is off in sunnier climes this week, so here's Sue to take us through a rundown of today's programme, in which we're concentrating on what's new on the Cambridge food and drink scene in 2018.
And there's a lot to look forward to this year. Not the least is the return of the Eat Cambridge Food and Drink Festival after its year off in 2017. Director Heidi White will be along to talk about some of the events. It's also a year in which new food providers will hit the market. With some advice for people wanting to do that from writer Bruce McMichael, whose book Cook, Wrap, Sell explains how to turn your love of food into a thriving small business.
And someone who has just started doing that is Peter Van Delft, whose company Cambridge Biltong has just begun trading, and we'll be talking with him. Dave Fox will be along too with a special feature on how to get started on growing your own fruit and vegetables.
In addition, I'll be talking about food trends for 2018, and we'll take a trip to a popular local pub and also hear from a brand new eatery, the Tiffin Truck.
And at intervals throughout the programme, we will bring you a few examples of what's new in Cambridge food and drink for 2018. And we'll begin with advice for people who would like to join the food industry. Here is Sue talking with writer Bruce McMichael at the Food Talk Awards.
Bruce has written two books that are very suitable for anyone who's a budding food entrepreneur. Could you just tell me the titles, first of all?
Certainly. One's called Cook, Wrap, Sell. That was the first one. And then after that, after you've set up your business, you want to get the next book. It's an e-book. It's called Cook, Wrap, Export.
OK. And you wrote these about 4 years ago, you said?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, about 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah. And why did you write them?
Because I was really interested in local food production, local markets, food festivals, and I could see there was a lot of people starting or thinking about setting up a business, but they didn't really know how to approach a local authority to get permission to sell food in the market or festival. And I just thought there was an opportunity there to explain and support small businesses to create a food environment in their local community.
Because there are no real books that actually help people to do that, not as far as I'm aware, and obviously you found that there was a gap in the market.
That's right, there are several, there's a couple in America. However, I thought in the UK there was an opportunity to get people moving away from thinking, I can't do this because it's my kitchen, my home kitchen, how do I do this? I can't face it. So the idea is to say, take it step by step, go from your kitchen to the farmer's market, for example, farmer's market to small production units, and then maybe in the future move into supplying supermarket. But I think there are other ways of promoting or creating a food company without actually going to the supermarkets. And supermarkets are great, but they do demand a lot of you. Depends what you want out of your food business. There are ways of promoting your food company through farmers markets, farm shops, food festivals, smaller independents, maybe Booth in northwest England. They're a really nice, supportive company. The Co-op are quite supportive. Maybe think about small to medium-sized businesses rather than going for the huge markets like Tesco's and Sainsbury's, where ultimately you might just be producing a product rather than a passion.
And how come you teamed up with Country Living? I mean, that's an unusual bedfellow, or is it?
A good question. It's not really an unusual bedfellow. However, superficially it might look like that, but Country Living is all about supporting people who live in the country. You might be living 20 or 30 miles from a town, from a railway station, from a distribution depot. So how do you create a small business, a small food business, bit of a distance from a market? How do you create it on your kitchen table? And Country Living liked the fact that we were promoting local food businesses in rural areas.
That's interesting, because again, Cambridge, East Anglia, it's a not dissimilar area to where you're from, which is the Guildford area, nearest to Guildford, or am I slightly wrong?
No. I was brought up in Guildford and now I live in West Kent. However, you mentioned eastern counties. Is it Brecknock?
Brecknock, yes,
the
indeed.
Forest.
Yes.
There's a wonderful company there that produces soft drinks.
That's right, yes.
And so they're incredibly successful. And they started off as a small company. Now they're really international or very national. I think the point is you can be quite distant from what people think of as the main food market in London, but still develop and create a food company.
And one of the winners was Foraging Fox for the Food Taste Awards, and yes, that's fairly local to the East Anglian area. So, and I've tried one of their ketchups, and they're absolutely amazing. They're a really nice product. Any last points that you'd like to suggest for someone who is really very much at the kitchen table stage? Carry on, give up, read your book.
Read my book and carry on. There's always a future. There's always a possibility of creating a fabulous product. Tonight at the awards, we've seen fudge, chocolate, ice cream, and they're all, even though you think everyone's done everything about these products, there's always a different angle that you can create. And I think in East Anglia, you have some amazing ingredients, whether you're foraging them or whether you're getting them from the coast. So I think it's a great opportunity to put East Anglia on the map as a food area.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. Great to meet you.
That was Bruce McMichael. His two books, Cook, Wrap, Sell and Cook, Wrap, Export, can be bought online. The second book is in ebook format only.
OK, so now for some new developments for 2018. Sue?
Midsummer House on Midsummer Common celebrates its 20th anniversary this summer. And to celebrate, there will be a Midsummer House book published in the spring. There will also be a major menu change from the current tasting menu to a full à la carte service. The change will necessitate a doubling of the size of the kitchen at a cost of £350,000.
From the 7th of February at Thirsty and Chesterton Road, we know them well, there will be more seating, more beers, more wines, more spirits, and meat and cheese platters available too.
More 2018 updates later in the programme.
Now, someone who has taken the step of setting up a food business very recently here in Cambridge is Peter Van Delft.
Peter, you've started up Cambridge Biltong. Can you tell us, well, first of all, when you started, and second, in case people don't know, what is Biltong?
I've started Cambridge Biltong beginning of December. There's been a lot of Biltong testing before that to make sure that the product's correct for the market. Biltong, in its simplest form, is a air-dried beef snack. Its origins goes back quite a long time, the 17th century, when the European settlers came to the sort of southern coast of Africa. They needed to preserve meat for the travellers to go inland, they need to preserve their meat. They saw the indigenous people preserving meat by salting it and then air drying it. They obviously put their own twist on it by adding vinegar and a few other spices, but that's really the sort of origin of biltong, as it were. So it's a marinated beef that's sort of salt and vinegar is the two main preserving agents that gets marinated for approximately between 4 and 12 hours. And then once that's done, it goes into a drying cabinet for 7 days, depending on what sort of cabinet you've got. And that's really what biltong is.
Right, so you say you've been testing it since the beginning of December. So what sort of things have you been varying and what have you discovered?
There's a big debate in the biltong community, as it were, about slicing with the grain of the meat and against the grain of the meat and at what stage you do that. There is a difference in texture when you eat it. If before you dry it, you slice with the grain, and then once it's dried and you slice it for packaging, that you slice against the grain, it creates a softer texture later on.
Wow.
The other variables is marination time, amount of salt, amount of vinegar and the other spices that go into it, getting that level right so that most people would be happy with the flavour is always a difficult one.
But whatever you do, if your ingredients aren't of really good quality, not going to get a great product. So are you getting good ingredients to start with?
That's the key thing for us. We want to ensure that what we start with and then the sort of showpiece of biltong is the beef. And we get all our beef at the moment from cam cattle. So anybody familiar with the sort of the red pole cattle grazing on Coldhamscommon and Grantchester Meadows, if you have some of our biltong, it would be one of those cattle that goes into our product. Cam cattle is quite well known for the quality of their beef, and it's super local. I mean, we can't get any more local than that, other than rearing it ourselves.
And in a pesticide-free environment as well.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Those are organic cattle, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
They're grazed outdoors, grass-fed, which is brilliant. And we feel that really comes through in the flavour of the biltong. To raise one cow is quite an intensive process, so we want to make sure that yeah, we do that justice when we make the biltong as well.
Right. And is your biltong on sale now that the exploratory phase is over?
Yes. So now that we've got the recipes correct, as it were, we're on sale at the moment, the Galdot, the Green Man in Grantchester, as well as the Cam Cattle stall on the Sunday market, will also be selling that. And hopefully that will increase over the coming months.
So the Cam Cattle one is obviously for people to take home, but at the Geldart and the Green Man, it's for eating on those premises.
Yes, so it's packaged in 35-gram pouches. We've got two flavours at the moment, the classic black pepper, which is the more traditional flavour, and then the second flavour is a spicy chilli. Some people will eat it and say, oh, this isn't spicy enough. Other people say, oh, this is too spicy. So we've tried to find a happy medium where you can taste the spice, but we don't want to lose the flavour of the beef.
Yeah. And have you had any feedback yet?
The best feedback I've had so far is actually from the lamb supplier from the Green Man, which is a South African as well. And he said it was really good biltong. So for a South African to say that our biltong is good is fantastic news.
Praise
so,
indeed. Yeah,
absolutely.
Great. Thanks very much, Peter. That's really interesting.
Thank you very much, Alan. Thanks.
Peter van Delft of Cambridge Biltong, available from the Sunday Market in Cambridge, on the Cam Cattle stall, as well as at the Green Man in Grantchester and the Geldart in Ainsworth Street here in Cambridge.
So have you had any biltong, Sue?
Actually, yes, I have. I've had the Cambridge biltong in the Green Man in Grantchester. It's really, really nice. And I love biltong. It's a very healthy snack.
Mm, excellent. And now for some more 2018 updates, yes?
Indeed. Joe Krasinska of Afternoon Teas is planning a pop-up. More info on our Twitter feed at Flavour105 soon. After 7 years, Sticky Beaks in Hobson Street is closing. Lucy and Catherine are moving on to a new venture. In its place will be Café Ubuntu, formerly of Wysing Arts Centre. It will be opening at the end of January or the beginning of February. More 2018 news later in the programme.
That is good news about Ubuntu, isn't it? I've heard so many people talking about that place and I've never been there myself.
Oh, I have been there and it's really lovely food. It's excellent. I'm looking forward to them coming into the centre of Cambridge.
Now, Peter van Delft's Cambridge biltong can be found at the Geldart, as he said, and of course we will be visiting the Geldart very shortly. But first, food trends for 2018. Sue, you spoke with our own Alan Alder about this.
Indeed, yes, there are lots of different people trying to identify different food trends. I spoke with Alan about some of the more interesting ones. Probably one of the most intriguing ones, which I've heard and I'd love to try, is this idea of pink chocolate from a particular type of cocoa bean, and it's a ruby cocoa bean, the fourth natural type of chocolate after dark and milk and white. And it's from the ruby cocoa beans that are being used at the moment only in catering and product development, so they're not available for sort of general usage. And it's being developed by a Swiss chocolatier called Barry Calibio.
So if that takes off, we'll be eating pink chocolate.
We might well presumably be eating pink chocolate. Yep, sounds really rather fun.
Any others?
Well, yes, there are some quite interesting ones. Things like different types of flour, coffee flour. Have you ever heard of that?
I guess you can get flour from most things, but we, for some reason, don't. I mean, didn't you say recently you've been trying pea flour with
pea flour, yes. I've with some research food product development work we've been doing recently, we've used pea flour, and that was to try and make some different type of gluten-free biscuits and cookies.
And but was there a taste of pea?
Yeah, that's the only problem. There is a bit of a pea taste. Right. So you've got to be a little bit careful about the sort of crossover flavours. So if you're using it in a savoury product, which in fact they then decided to develop pizza bases, that wasn't quite so much of a problem.
Yeah.
But if you're using it in a sweet product, it's obviously not going to work so well.
But I suppose the implication is that coffee flour will have probably something of the taste of coffee about it.
Well, again, this is where it's a waste product from the coffee roasting process, made from the dried and ground coffee cherries, and it's a gluten-free product. And again, I have not tried this, and I'd like to try it to see whether or not it does have this slight overtaste or undertaste or whatever of coffee.
But that would be good in some cakes, wouldn't it?
Well, yes. I mean, it's suggested that it can be used in breads and muffins, all different types of baking, as it's potential, as it's, it is gluten-free. But it could also be used in sauces and savoury dishes. So whether or not it has a slight sort of coffee taste, as long as it will work with what it's being used for, then sounds a really interesting product to try.
Yeah. We, on the programme recently, we had Alison McTaggart from Bread on a Bike, and she was talking about the developments in San Francisco, greater use of older grains in bread making.
Ah, yes.
Is that likely to happen next year, this year?
Yes, I think it might well happen. I mean, British grains and pulses, this is being predicted as one of the future trends. I mean, we've got in the East Anglian area, the Suffolk-based company Hodmadod, who won BBC Food and Farming Awards. So they've got some really interesting historic grains, and they, you know, they're now doing lentils, which used to be grown here prehistorically. And there's lots of other historic grains, such as spelt and kamut and emmer, which again could be used for a range of different types of products. And I bought some spelt moderately recently and made a lovely speltotto out of it. You know, not a risotto, but a spelt-based, grain-based risotto, which had a much more dense texture. So it was different to using rice, and it had a much more, a more nutty taste, a more interesting taste than using brown rice. Actually, I really, really enjoyed it. So I'll be making that again.
What about, I think in the last year or so, the rise of veganism has been extraordinary. Is that set to continue?
That's true. I mean, I've been looking at different food trends being predicted by people in the industry and food writers and food magazines. Everyone is saying veganism and vegetarianism are going to be and carrying on being the trends for 2018. Obviously, you know, January, February, everyone's thinking, help, you know, pull the belts back in. Try and eat healthily. And of course, veganism and vegetarianism very much are part of a healthy eating trend. Also links in with eating locally as well, trying to reduce food miles, perhaps reducing food waste too. There's some other sort of nutrition-y types of things like sort of personalised nutrition and things like super powders rather than superfoods. I mean, some of these things are very sort of trendy-ish. And super powders, well, what are they? I mean, is it just literally a sort of dried version of kale? I think I'd rather eat kale than a kale powder, frankly. But and superfoods, there's no real meaning to that, actually. It's something that's got a good level of nutrition, but there's no legal definition of a superfood whatsoever.
Superfoods seems to me to be slightly curious thinking, because we don't eat one food.
We don't.
We eat a whole range of food, and it's through the range of foods that we eat that we should be getting the full spectrum of vitamins, minerals and other nutrients.
So
I'm always a bit doubtful about
it. I know, so am I, I'm afraid. I'm a bit fecidical on those types of things.
About superfoods, and even more so about super powders.
I mean, okay, I've had powdered green tea and done that in cakes. You know, you can do interesting things. Yeah. So I'm not totally dissing them, but and in fact, the students, when we were making these gluten-free pizzas, we were using things such as beetroot powders and carrot powders to give different types of coloration to it. So they're going to be presenting their products quite soon, so I shall tell you exactly what they're like.
Right. But the story of food and the way food develops, it seems to have infinite possibilities, doesn't it?
It does indeed. I mean, this is where, I suppose you could say, I'm always interested in the history of food as well, and going back to sort of historic issues, and are we really reinventing something, or is it something that we used to have and we've totally forgotten about? And until you actually do the research, you don't really know the answer to that one. But I think we're also blessed with the fact that we've got food from so many parts of the world now. We've got importation of things such as jackfruit, for example, which links into our vegetarian and veganism thing. So it's the, you know, the pulled pork for the vegetarians. So, but we've got the ability to have all these foodstuffs and food ideas from around the world, which is fantastic.
Stick.
Stick, indeed.
And
And that music signals, as usual, that it's time for the latest food tweets on the city. So do you want to go ahead, Sue?
Indeed. Well, one that caught my eye was the idea of gin macaroons. Mm. And this is at the Tamboulin, created by the head pastry chef there, Jerome Viard. I think I might be popping along to try those because I like gin, I like macaroons. Why not put the two together? And then going on the other side, slightly linking into the sort of the health kick, listen to these yummy recipe things. Herb roasted sweet potato, spinach and celeriac phyllo pie, tender stem broccoli with toasted almonds and herb yogurt. Well, these are all available as part of the winter wellness menu. Two meals for £20. And this is at the Station Tavern. So you could do a gin macaroon after you've done your wellness kick.
And why not?
I understand the next feature is one you've been wanting to do for years, Matt.
Yeah. Hidden away amongst the back streets of Mill Road, on the corner of Ainsworth Street, is a pub called the Geldart. The original producer of Flavour was Elaine Cusack, as we know, and her final feature for the programme was about the Geldart, but that was 9 years ago. Elvis Yurchevsky is the landlord now, as he was then, and this is what I feel to be a timely update. Firstly, a salute to Elaine. Secondly, a salute to a pub that I hope more people get the chance to visit.
Yeah. You remember this pub before Elvis had it? Do you remember when
I
it was,
read about it?
Man Irish Mary had it. It was a bit of a lock-in. And this was the days before, you know, they had late licenses.
Chips!
It's incredible history in this pub.
If someone was to say to me, the Geldart, I would think...
Interesting pub.
Friday evenings, with friends.
We like it.
Everyone's got their own seat.
Full of colourful characters, the Geldart.
It is one of the old pubs left in Cambridge.
Just as long as we can get a seat at the bar on a Tuesday night, we're happy.
That we need to support and enjoy.
You say to someone, oh, if you're in Cambridge and you want to have something to eat, go into Elvis's.
Was this place closed for a few years before?
It was, actually, yeah. It was in the right old state. Elvis did a lot of work on it.
Yeah, one of the problems with recommending this to friends is that you tend to forget what the pub's actually called. You're so used to calling it Elvis's, and automatically we say, oh, we're going to Elvis's tonight. And then you think, what's the place called? And then you suddenly think, oh, yeah, it's the Geldart, yeah. But trying to think where it is, what the street's called, because we walk here automatically. We could do it in our sleep.
The main thing is that Elvis here is a great champion of music, and that's really, really, really important, especially in Cambridge. Well, as you know.
The roaring fire in one side, live music in the other side.
This place is great to come back to. Don is an older guy who loves tending to the fire.
Gives him something to do.
Yes.
I've heard about this guy. I didn't know his name. Someone mentioned him to me just the other day.
He just lives up.
Yeah.
About 150 yards that way.
Yeah.
He's in sheltered accommodation. So.
Yeah. Looking after the fire is his pride and joy.
Yeah, so we come here twice a week. Sometimes we come here not intending to eat and then we do.
I think the nicest feature is that it is a neighbourhood pub. Lovely atmosphere in here. I always think it's home from home, and we enjoy the locals.
Yes, we do make a trip over here on Tuesday nights. Four of us, Baldock, Letchworth and Hitchin. Been doing it now for probably 20-odd years to Cambridge. Just come up on the train, have a few beers. Always start off here and work our way back towards the station.
But Roger, the landlord, said, don't worry, folks, in the defibrillator.
We've got one lady calls us the Baldock Mafia and that sort of thing. She's a regular. If we come in on a day other than Tuesday, it confuses the hell out of them because the other week we couldn't make the Tuesday because there were no trains or something. We came in on a Wednesday and they're all looking at their watches going, what? Is this isn't Tuesday, is it?
What makes you start here in particular?
The beer's good.
Four regular ales we have all the time. We've got Duker's IPA.
We particularly like the Duker's. It's one of the few places you can get the Duker's nowadays, so we like to start off with that. It's a good, easy beer.
We've got Tribute, which is a Cornish pale ale.
Yeah, Cornish beer. I brought up in Cornwall, so I'm fairly happy with some Austral beer.
Cornish beer.
We've got Adam's Ghost Ship, and then quite popular, we've got the Citra, which is an Oaken's ale.
And then just looking across, we've got some guest ales as well that you have, yeah?
Four rotating guest ales. At the moment, we've got Washing Point, We've got Sea Lord, Titanic and Ballon Black. And so we usually have a light, a medium, a dark and then a stronger bitter.
9 times out of 10 he's got the Dukas on for us, so it's not a problem.
That gets worn up a bit.
Have you tried one of Elvis's Hot Rocks meals?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Well, I mean, what could be better, you know?
So this is you dipping salt onto the hot rock slate, yeah?
Yeah, so there's rock salt that goes on the volcanic rock first, and then the meat will go on.
And it comes to the table, cook it how you like.
Flipped each side so it's seared on the outside, served to the customer. And they can decide how rare, medium or well done they want their steak. The rocks range from just the ordinary, like chicken or pork and steak, to the exotic as well. So we have crocodile, kangaroo, camel. We're very proud that we sell horse, llama, zebra. The exotic meats change regularly, so we always have something new to try if you're feeling a bit adventurous.
And it's all absolutely delicious.
So my favourite meat on the hot rock is the buffalo. It's quite a sweet meat, but quite dark as well, so almost like liver, that sort of taste. Oh. So croc and kangaroo is a real favourite with a lot of the locals.
Quite rich, quite intense, I would say, but very enjoyable.
That's the actual name of the plate.
Yeah, and crocodile always tastes of what it's eaten.
Yeah.
So if it tastes like chicken, it's been fed on chicken. If it tastes like fish, then it's eaten fish.
We've never had a hot rock.
We've never had
3 years been coming here, never had one.
Because this is like home-cooked food, whereas the hot rock is all this kangaroo and fancy exotic stuff. Like today, I had the spare ribs casserole, which was just nice winter food, a basic food with mashed potatoes. Yeah.
Have the hot rocks always been a thing ever since Elvis took over at the Gildart?
Yeah, I think Elvis was influenced from when he lived in Australia, and it's quite popular out there.
Yeah, I used to have a restaurant in Australia.
And he decided to bring it to the UK and...
So I came across these hot stones, people importing from New Zealand, and and just kind of tried it. It was a bit of a gamble, but it worked.
It's been really popular, it's been a hit.
So it's basically just me and another chef in here, so if he's not here, I'm cooking, and usually he's here, so it's good for me. I stay out of the kitchen.
I like the cooking a lot. I'm German and the cook is Polish, but some of the cooking is quite similar to German cooking, especially in winter where he does a lot of game. That's what you do in Germany, and you don't really get it in pubs in Cambridge otherwise.
1, 2, 3, hey!
Good range of beers, nice conversation. People come in here to talk, as opposed to sort of just drink themselves into oblivion, which is quite nice.
When you come into the pub and that people know what you want straight away, I think that makes you feel like that wanted and like a regular.
Elvis has really turned the place around. I mean, it's just fantastic, isn't it? So much music.
Jazz to rock to soul.
I mean, it's even further off the back streets than the back street history.
Yeah, exactly. We are off the beaten track, but you'd never know that.
Yeah.
Such community spirit. You have some of our regulars that go to 3 or 4 different pubs a night, and they almost feel like they're doing the rounds and checking in on us. So they go to the Blue and then they come here and then they're off to the Kingston. It's like their natural migration.
He's very modest, is Elvis. I know he's not enthusiastic about having his own voice on the radio.
I'll do it for him. Listen, Elvis is he's a terrific landlord, he's a terrific chef. He runs the place really brilliantly. I can't say any more than that. And there you go.
Do you know what his surname is?
Josavineski, or...
I think it's Jarnowski, but I wouldn't want to say that for definite.
Jarnowski.
Elvis, forgive me on that. I have seen it written down.
Janevsky.
My pronunciation is pretty rubbish.
You're Mr. Lebowski. I'm the dude.
Actually, hold on.
Was that again?
Yonchevsky. Decent attempt.
There's something about playing music on a Sunday afternoon.
I'm talking with Freddie Hall. Now, Freddie, you're famous here at the Gildart.
Yeah, I kind of have a little household name here, and it's gone very well for the past couple of years that I've played here. I'm a soul singer, incorporated with Motown, rhythm, blues. Sweet soul. I've shared the stage with the Temptations, with Aretha Franklin. I feel like I have experience to entertain a crowd. said, Georgia. You know, when I was 11 years old, growing up in upstate New York, I got a chance to meet Nat King Cole. It's a voice that I always wanted to, not necessarily copy, but I always wanted my voice to be as clear as his.
Comes in sweet and clear.
I think I've kind of achieved that. Of course, a lot depends on how much I've had to drink that night.
Don't you know that?
I guess over the years, you've been able to try the hot rocks and the other food that's on offer here.
I've had the hot rocks, I've had the pasta, I've had the fish and chips. And by the way, the fish and chips are the best here. In my opinion, they're the best in Cambridge. You get a huge piece of fish that's just...
I mean, it's huge.
It's just very tasty.
We quite often get one fish and chips and two plates, to be honest.
Richard likes his fish and chips.
Yeah, we're seniors. Can't really manage a whole one anymore. I don't think I've ever finished it by myself, though. I've come to within about five chips, I think, when I'm really going.
They don't serve senior portions, but they know us, so they bring out the second plate. So that's actually very nice, yeah.
The service, the people that work here are outstanding. They're very friendly, they're very cordial, they look after you. And Elvis is the same way, you know, being the owner. He makes sure that everything is a number 10.
I think Elvis knows what he's doing, and he's very keen to find out when they're trying something new in the kitchen, whether we've liked it, etc. In fact, I have booked a big birthday party here for the end of this year already, because it's so nice.
Funny enough, I've just booked my wife's 60th birthday here as well. But my wife and I come in several Saturdays a month and come and eat here. So yeah, food's very good. Plenty of it.
The whole menu is good, in case you want to come in. Have gammon egg and chips. You won't get a better piece of gammon in Cambridge, in my opinion. So there you go. But yeah, it's a fine place.
I like pubs that look like they're traditional pubs. And this is always one that looks like a traditional pub.
Oh, get outside of the garden in the summer. Get here maybe before 4 o'clock, because it settles down over on the side. There was a nice a gin and tonic, you know, just to set yourself up in the summer, around about 4 o'clock. Perfect.
Elvis has put his own stamp on it and done it really well. It's not, he's not just copying somebody else. He's doing his own thing, music-wise, food-wise. Just a fact, and I think everybody knows it. Keeps his beers in immaculate condition as well.
It's a nice little spot. We like to come here whenever we can. So.
You always get a welcome. You always see the regular characters around. Always someone to talk to. It certainly helps when you've got a fire burning here in the winter.
Many thanks to Elvis, his staff, the locals and the musicians that you regularly find at the Geldart. And incidentally, Freddie Hall, who you heard there, and his band will be playing rhythm and blues, soul and original tracks live on Thursday the 8th of February. All info can be found via Twitter at Geldart_pub, or you can search The Geldart Pub on Facebook, or just go to their website, the-geldart.co.uk. Their menu is much bigger than what I highlighted in this feature. For example, I've had the vegetarian platters there and they leave you completely stuffed and happy. But I'm definitely going for that fish and chips next.
Yum. More 2018 news now, and this sequence is about pop-ups. Squire's Kitchen will be holding a medieval feast at Fitzbillies on 26th January at Fitzbillies in Trumpington Street, a Valentine's meal in Swavesey on 14th February, and a meal at Cambridge Regional College on 3rd of March. Bookings can be made via Twitter or Instagram at SquireChef85. And Rosie Sykes, ex-Fitzbillies and Pint Shop, is planning five pop-ups this year, including one as part of the Eat Cambridge Food and Drink Festival in May.
And let's delve right into that, because Alan caught up with Heidi White of Eat Cambridge 2018 to discuss some of the upcoming events.
We've got some really nice seasonal-focused food and drink events that are really indicative of the Cambridge food scene at the moment. A huge range, actually, from a bit of a resurgence of pop-ups.
Good.
With collaborations between different chefs and restaurants in quite cool new venues, featuring drinks as well, quite a lot of drinks tastings, some natural wines tastings, which we haven't done before, some cocktail events, botanicals, foraging, So lots of really nice seasonal elements showcasing the best of Cambridge food.
Right. When you say foraging, you mean people actually taking you out on
the forage? Yes, there's an event that's aiming to be a multi-sensory experience, they say, which includes people actually foraging for ingredients for a supper, which includes edible plants and flowers and drinks as well. So that sounds like that will be a really exciting one. There's lots of other events with seasonal elements and botanical elements as well, including a rooftop party with cocktails and a seasonal supper. So that sounds fantastic as well.
Right. And you said before events happening at different locations from usual. So
I feel like over the last year or so since we've been away, there have actually been some quite exciting new openings. The food scene's still really booming and new venues are popping up, or existing venues are just looking at doing more collaborative things and inviting people in, like Calverley's Brewery, for example. They'll be hosting a few different tastings involving other food businesses coming in to offer food alongside their beer, which is really exciting and makes use of just a quirky little space, which isn't anything huge, but it's just what Eat Cambridge is about, really, just making use of all these really nice venues that we've got in our food scene. There are a couple of examples looking at the really topical theme of food waste. So there's going to be a Ready Steady Cook style food waste feast where some chefs use ingredients that would otherwise be wasted and cook up quite an exciting feast in front of the audience. So,
and can the audience eat any?
Yeah, I think they can. Yeah, I'll let you know. I'll keep you posted. I'll speak to the chefs involved. But there's also some really good pop-up. There's one event which for the first time brings together two of our top street food traders cooking together, which will be really exciting. There's going to be a fine dining supper as well, which is fine dining food but in a really communal, relaxed atmosphere where diners will be able to interact more with the chef in a chef's table type format, which is also still really popular.
The main event, which is taking place again in the Corn Exchange, is it?
No, we've hired the Guildhall actually for the main event. It's on Saturday the 19th of May, so the first day of the festival. The main event will kick off the next 2 weeks of events. And we've gone with the Guildhall, which has got two beautiful spaces for us to have all of the stallholders in, plus a quite grand council chamber where the talks will take place. So it's all a bit more accessible and on one level compared to the Corn Exchange. And we'll have lots more space in the council chamber for people to sit in and listen to the talks, because they were quite oversubscribed the last couple of years.
Yes, well, there have been some really interesting talks. Have you got any interesting ones lined up this time then?
We'll have a couple of items on food history, some book signings with some quite new releases. We'll have an update on the food hub plans from Cambridge Sustainable Food, because that's really taking off now, and also some new speakers who are moving to the area from neighbouring counties to open up some quite exciting, innovative new little eateries this year. So there'll be lots to discover.
So just remind us of the dates again.
So Saturday the 19th of May is the start of Eat Cambridge. That's when the main event will take place in the city centre with the talks programme running all day, and then the festival runs for 2 weeks until the 2nd of June.
Foraging, botanicals, seasonal suppers, plenty of talks and cocktails on rooftops. Plenty of variation and collaborations that serve to highlight the diversity of the Cambridge food scene. Roll on Saturday 19th May and the launch of Eat Cambridge. If you'd like to find out more and perhaps get involved, check out the details on their website, eat-cambridge.co.uk. It's organised and run entirely by volunteers, just like Cambridge 105 Radio.
We've eaten a lot of hyphens today. Yeah, a new Indian restaurant has opened in Regent Street. It's called Tiffin Truck. It's owned by the people who run Navadanya in Newmarket Road. And the formal fine dining Navadanya is listed in the Michelin Guide.
Tiffin Truck aims to be more of a casual, tapas-style Indian street food offering, leaning more towards families and children. Louise Wilson reports.
Having already got a successful model in Navadanya, which is more fine dining, why did you want to go down this sort of more street food aspect of things?
If you visit Navadanya and Tiffin Truck on the same day, probably you will see much difference between the ambience and then the serving method and then the dishes presentation, everything. With Tiffin Truck, everything changes.
And
so this is why we want to concentrate on both sides of the sectors. One is the formal dining, the other one is the, like, a road style, casual street food style as well. So.
And do you think there's a gap in the market? Because there are so many Indian restaurants and Asian eateries in and around Cambridge. But do you think this is presenting something that's entirely different to that?
Yeah, definitely. There are thousands of Indian dishes. So it's just not, even though we got many restaurants, but the menu that we have designed, we have to say in a particular way that, you know, we don't want to replicate what other restaurants are doing it in any particular dishes. So we wanted to create something. For example, we do like a bun tiki, which is like an Indianized burger. Again, not many restaurants are doing that now. And we do something called nasa, like a pizza cooked on a non bread. And if you take like a dessert, we do masala chai brulee, the normal brulee. So we have the masala chai as an Indian flavor to the brulee. And then again on the ice cream as well. So we do chili ice cream. So it's so sweet, but we wanted to give a kick to it. So there are some dishes where we can't introduce in Navadanya.
Yeah.
For example, all the street foods like pani puri, pav bhaji. So this is why we want to bring those dishes and introduce it with different truck model, where it'll be more street food style.
So the idea of the Tiffin Truck, with they called Wallahs?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and it was to replace the afternoon tea that in the days of the Raj. Is this true?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So it's like a light meal.
And is that why there's a slight fusion between sort of a bit of a British twist on it, as well as, you know, the Indian
heritage?
That's
the idea. So, for example, in Mumbai, especially in Mumbai, so there's a team called Dabbawalas. Their job is to go to every household and collect the lunches from housewife to their husbands, and then they deliver it to the offices. So what we want to introduce is a similar concept with the three-tier and different box. So we deliver that to offices in the lunches, and so we can reuse them as well in the metal boxes. So we can do takeaway as well with those boxes.
So you very kindly offered for me to bring a plus one along today. So I invited my mother along, and she's been busily tucking away into the beautiful looking dishes. So I'm going to just pass over to her quickly to talk me through some of the ones that you've been trying.
Well, I started with a mini masala dosa, which is described as a South Indian pancake stuffed with spiced potato, served with chutney and sambar. And I can tell you, it was quite different from anything I've had before, and it was absolutely delicious. The pancake was crispy and light. It was served like a little teepee. The potato was really delicately spiced and beautiful. I had coconut chutney, which I've never experienced before, and that was an interesting taste and a very good compliment. So I can see why these dishes are put together. I also had a country captain Anglo-Indian style lamb curry. It was one of the nicest curries I've ever tasted. The lamb was beautiful and succulent, and the sauce had a little tiny kick, but it also had a beautiful fruity fresh taste to it as well. Just plain rice to go with it. And I had dal maharani. Now, I love lentils and I love all forms of dal, and this one didn't let me down at all. It was really delicious. So I would highly recommend all of those dishes at least.
You've got some launches coming up. When will they be happening, and how can people get involved in coming along to the launch parties?
Yes, so we are planning to do the launch in the third week of January when people are back from holiday. So there is a form on our website where people just go on and fill in their details. So we gave a couple of options which time they want to like to attend. I think there are about three.
So what is the website?
Tiffintruck.co.uk.
Tiffintruck.co.uk. So as well as the food as well, you're also offering a range of craft beers and cocktails.
On the drink wise as well, we got beers like Desi beer, that's a lager. We also do like Blowhorn, like a chai flavored cider as well. And the cocktail wise, so again, we wanted to do some Indian fusion cocktail. So if you see our cocktail variety, so for example, we use Katta Meetha, which is well received so far with customers. That's made with tamarind paste, with a standard tequila, triple sec orange juice and everything.
And so with the tamarind, because it's quite a sharp flavour, isn't it? So is that almost like a citrusy lemon sort of replacement
and
in a way? Yeah.
Sour as well, isn't it? We also do like a Bengal tiger, again, so and customers like Bengal tiger, so that's
quite familiar.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And that's with pomegranate juice with white rum and brandy, so
brilliant.
Thank you so much.
It's nice to see somewhere that sells something a bit different, reflecting the diversity of Indian cuisine. Thanks to Louise Wilson and her mum for that feature.
Yeah, and that's the Tiffin truck on Regent Street. Just opened. So, on to the next feature, and I'm sure a lot of people listen to Dave Fox's regular broadcasts from Trumpington Allotments, and they think, you know, I'd like to have a go at growing some food for 2018. Well, here is the first of a two-part guide to beginning to grow your own with Dave Fox.
Dave, what advice is there for people who want to start growing fruit and vegetables? Like, where do they begin? You know, they've got a corner of the garden, say.
Or an allotment. Unfortunately, you're often faced with an overgrown area, lots of weeds. So dig out deep-rooted perennial things, so dock, thistle, bramble, and then if you can access something like a strimmer, that's really useful for knocking back the less pernicious weeds. Although do first check for rubble and wire and stuff like that, because that doesn't often make a mess of machinery. So try and flatten it, and then you've got your first harvest, which of course is biomass, compostable biomass. All the greener, less pernicious stuff that can be put into your first compost heap. So you're going to want to think about, where do I want my compost heap to be? Probably in a more shady part of the garden where you're not going to want to grow plants. So that introduces the idea of planning. Where are we going to put our compost heap? And then where are we going to have our pathways? Where are we going to want to put the crops? Sunlight is a key ingredient. If you're taking on 120 square metres, which is half of a full-size allotment, then maybe try to cultivate half of it in the first year and cover the other half. So that's what we call mulching. And the advantage of mulching is that we're covering the land with something that will prevent the weeds from growing. So that could be horticultural black plastic, which will stop the sunlight and the rain, for that matter, and therefore no weeds will grow under there. And then that can be pulled back in subsequent years and a more easily cultivatable soil revealed. A mulch could also comprise of a very thick layer of organic matter, and this is the best way to do it if you can acquire enough stuff. And that stuff can include any or all of multiple layers of cardboard, manure, compost, grass clippings, leaf mould, so we're talking about leaves that were collected the year before rather than this year's leaves, because they take a little longer to rot down. Twigs, fallen branches, wood chippings, bark, wood ash, essentially almost any organic matter. Cover the soil with that, probably starting with several layers of cardboard to give a little bit of extra resistance to those weed roots that are trying to grow through, and put the various layers of other organic material on top. And if you can get 10, 20, even 30 centimetres of depth, that's the sort of depth you're looking for to really give those weeds a hard time and stop them breaking through. Because once they reach through to sunlight, then they're away. And they're being fed by all the good stuff you put on top. So the idea is to really smother the weeds completely for a year or even more. And you're buying yourself some time there. So perhaps at the end of year one, you've got 60 square metres cultivated, which hopefully is within your capability, and another 60 square metres really fertile, ready to go, which you could reveal under the black plastic, or you could plant straight through the mulch with larger plants or trees, larger seedlings or trees, or you could dig the mulch in and incorporate it and then put in finer seeded crops. So I would strongly suggest dividing your work up. Don't try and do it all in year one, because otherwise you'd put your back out.
Yeah, okay. But what about where you are going to start this year? You're not going to mulch it. Where do you begin with that?
I mean, I'm pretty much a no-dig gardener these days, but I think an initial dig over to get those perennial roots out is a good idea. You'll never get them all out. You'll certainly never get them all out on the first pass, so go over it again. I would hand dig. I would not recommend the use of a rotavator. The reason, a lot of people do think that's the way to start, but unfortunately what that does is it chops up the pernicious weed roots. So here it's bindweed. On other sites, maybe other weeds would be the predominant ones, but if you chop those things up, then they'll regrow.
So you've got lots of little bindweed plants.
Pick it out, make sure it gets dried out and killed off and doesn't regrow. But hopefully after that process, you've then got a reasonably weed-free fine tilth. It all says on the seed packet, sow into a fine tilth. And we're aiming to get there when the soil started to warm up, so April, probably. April and May are the best times for sowing. At that point, I would suggest starting with some of the relatively easier crops. So don't start trying to grow, cauliflower or celeriac, because they're both a bit more demanding. Obvious ones, I would say, are early potatoes, broad beans, runner beans, tomatoes, lettuce, radish. So there's six things to start with, at least. Although, of course, even more important than that, actually, is to decide what it is you like to eat. Strawberries as well. Who could forget strawberries?
Right,
actually, get some strawberries in there. Easy peasy. Yeah. Although you need to plan ahead for strawberries, because ideally they would go in autumn and August, September, and then get strong over winter, get their cold dormancy period, which is what provokes them into producing flowers and fruit the next summer, and then you have strawberries next June and July.
Yeah, right, so between now and, say, April, you're digging, you're getting rid of roots, and some of the roots will be quite deep, will they?
Yes.
Okay, so how far down might they be, things like bindweed?
Oh, bindweed goes all the way down to hell.
So anyway, you spend up until April doing your digging, but you're also thinking about what you're going to grow and, I suppose, where you're going to put it.
Absolutely, yeah. So I would divide your plot up into several distinct sections where you're going to grow different types of crops, that is, plants in different families, because the following year you want to avoid planting the same type of crop in the same place. You want to practice a rotation system.
And that's partly because of soil nutrient depletion
and also disease build-up, exactly. Those two things, so the way to do that is to get where is it now, that's a half centimeter squared grid. You could sketch out your plot on a grid, do it to scale, so measure your plot out. I just use a full pace to represent a meter, which is close enough, and then divide it into beds, allow paths that are wide enough for you to walk down. If you've got someone who's a bit less mobile, or even a wheelchair user, that's going to influence the width of your paths. So I would say paths maybe at least 40 centimetres wide, perhaps even wider. And then dedicate one bed to potatoes, another bed to beans, another bed to brassicas would be the third type, and then everything else would be the fourth.
But brassicas are a bit more tricky, and you might not want to start with them. Well, you mentioned cauliflowers anyway.
Cauliflowers are tricky, but so other brassicas are much easier. So I certainly wouldn't want to discourage anyone from growing kale, for example. It doesn't get pest damage to the extent that other overwintering brassicas like broccoli do, for example. So then you've got a sketch map of what's going where, and you can proceed on that basis. Another thing to mention is don't sow everything all at once. So if you're growing broad beans, then split the packet of seed into two, sow a row or a square bedful, and then sow another one a month later, just in case the first lot fail for some reason. And in any case, if both of them work, then you've got a succession of crops, which is better. So a farmer, by contrast, or a conventional farmer at least, wants an enormous field of a crop to mature all at the same time so it can be processed by machine. You don't want that as a home grower. You want a succession of harvests so you can enjoy the crop for several months, perhaps.
I suppose it's terribly variable, but what's the level of nutrients in the soil if you're taking something over? Will you have to fertilise it before you start?
The primary indicator probably is the weeds. So if when you take the plot on, the weeds are growing well, then that shows there's plenty of nutrient in there. If there's a lot of nettle growing there, that shows it's probably quite high in nitrogen. That's a good sign, although the nettle's quite hard to eradicate. So I'm not a great expert on nutrient. I don't know much that can't be cured by applying a large amount of well-rotted horse manure or a large amount of well-homemade compost. Either of these things are going to provide a full spectrum of nutrients.
And are there any plants that are averse to that? Because it's quite strong stuff, isn't it? Manure.
Yes, it is, and especially if it's not really well rotted. I mean, fresh manure is obviously pretty unpleasant stuff. It's you don't want to handle it, and it's possibly got pathogens in that won't be present in the well-rotted version. Yeah. So Trumpington Allotments gets its manure from the Shetland Pony Welfare Trust.
Are they local?
They're local enough to deliver it to us. But the only thing to say about that is get your order in early, because come Easter and afterwards they're massively booked up.
Yeah.
They have a top quality product. The great thing about their manure is that they know it's not contaminated by that horrible herbicide that we got hit with a few years back.
And also, can't you get well-rotted ex-green bin refuse?
Yes, you can, from Amy Cesper at Waterbeach. That's the recycling facility that certainly from Cambridge and South Cambridgeshire, all our curbside collection of green waste goes to get chopped up and composted at a very high temperature, which of course kills pathogens and hopefully most weed seeds.
And is it costly?
It's free if you go and collect it. You can also, if you want lots, you could get some delivered, but I think you have to pay for that. The most convenient way I've found was to buy for £2.50 a sealed bag of the stuff. It was maybe only 40 litres or so, but I thought for £2.50 that was a jolly good deal. Certainly cheaper than commercial composts.
Yeah.
And that comes from the household waste recycling centres. There's one at Milton and the other is at Triplow. Although this curbside product is not really a compost as such, because most of the nutrient value has been lost in the composting process. It's more, they call it a soil conditioner. It's the black stuff. If you've got, like we have at Trumpington, a quite a sandy soil, then adding this organic matter has got to be a good move, because that's going to improve the moisture retention, which is what you want if the soil's naturally dry.
Dave Fox there with some advice on starting to grow your own fruit and veg. Now, our final look at some of what 2018 will hold. And chef Sam Carter is taking over the running of Restaurant 22 in Chesterton Road. And we're planning to feature him on a future programme.
And there'll be a new restaurant opening late spring at the University Arms in Regent Street. It's Parker's Tavern, and Tristan Welch is the chef. He has trained in Europe's best kitchens alongside Gary Rhodes, Gordon Ramsay and Michael Rood Jr. More on that in a future flavour too.
On now to Cambridge's food and drink news, beginning with jobs. The Old Spring in Ferry Path off Chesterton Road is looking for a chef de partie. Pop in for details. And the Trinity in Trinity Street also is looking for a chef de partie. Phone Cambridge 356 060 or email info@trinitycambridge.co.uk for details.
Good news for the environment. Shelford Deli in Great Shelford is using 100% compostable coffee cups and lids. And more good news, the Cambridge Food Assembly is reopening soon. There'll be a meeting at the tram depot off East Road at 6 p.m. on Wednesday for anyone with questions.
For one night only, and that night is the 3rd of February, at Cambridge Cookery in Purbeck Way off Hills Road, Alex Rushmer, ex of The Hole in the Wall, is cooking two courses for £27 or three courses for £35. Children are half price, and now they're having to find extra seating for that event, so you'll almost definitely have to ask to be put on the waiting list. And the Waterman at 32 Chesterton Road near Mitcham's Corner is having a vegan weekend on the 26th to the 28th of January, and it will feature four beers from Crafty Beers.
Another event taking place next weekend is Over Village Market. This was co-founded by three successful local food producers, Fen End Country Kitchen, whose range of preserves and chutneys has attracted success in the National Great Taste Food Awards, plus Orb Real Bread and Rosegate Farm Butchery, both award-winning local producers. All stallholders come from within a 30-mile radius. It includes hot food and drink outlets, and there are around 15 to 20 different stalls at each event, often including preserves, fruit and vegetables, flowers, chocolate, cheese, meat, cider, as well as non-food stalls. It's on the 27th of January from 10 to 12:30. And the next one after that is the 10th of March. It's on Over Village Green in Willingham Road in Over.
Over. And that brings us to the end of this episode of Flavour. We'll be back on the 3rd of February at noon, but don't forget you can catch our previous episodes via our Cambridge 105 podcast page or via iTunes from early next week.
Remember, you can email us flavour@cambridge105.co.uk or follow us on Twitter @flavour105. And you can follow Cambridge 105 Radio @Cambridge105.
So, until the 3rd of February, it only remains for myself and Sue to say thanks very much for listening. And until then,
goodbye.